this sounds so odd, but there's a very long sequence at the beginning where they all say, hi, Barbie, hi, Ken, hi, Barbie, hi, Ken, hi, Barbie, hi, Ken, hi, Ken, hi, Barbie, I got us both ice creams or whatever it is. And I had them do it so many times because I wanted them to embrace the absurdity of it. And something Ryan said after me, he said, I think you were tuning us.
Hello, and welcome back to The Director's Cut, brought to you by the Directors Guild of America. In honor of the 76th Annual DGA Awards, we're bringing back our annual series of episodes devoted to our popular Meet the Nominees Theatrical Feature Film Symposium. The event is a roundtable discussion with the directors nominated for the Guild's Award for Outstanding Directorial Achievement in Theatrical Feature Film. This year's nominees included Greta Gerwig, the director of Barbie, Yorgos Lanthimos, the director of Poor Things, Christopher Nolan, the director of Oppenheimer, Alexander Payne, the director of The Holdovers, and Martin Scorsese, the director of Killers of the Flower Moon. These talented directors gathered on stage at the Guild's Los Angeles Theater on February 10th to discuss the craft of directing and the making of their films with moderator Jeremy Kagan. So please enjoy part two of our Meet the Nominees Theatrical Feature Film special, and listen to our five nominees conclude their discussion.
Greta, can you talk about rehearsal before? And particularly, I'm interested in Robbie's body and the changes that go through Margot Robbie's body.
Oh, sure.
And then can you talk about when you're on a set, and I'll pick a specific scene, which I'd love, which talk about the rehearsal of the scene with Sasha, first meet, because it's a wonderful scene, and she obviously breaks down. So I'm curious how you rehearse that on set, but pre-shooting, what was rehearsal process?
Yeah, I love rehearsal. I do a lot of it. I think thus far, I tend to, either alone or I wrote the script with Noah Baumbach, who's my my husband and my artistic partner, and we, alone and also together, I tend to write very specific musical scripts, and I mean they're not literally musicals, although sometimes they are, but they're I have a sense of how the rhythm of the words, and it's not that I need them said in a certain way, but there's a kind of a cadence and a meter that I actually sometimes, even when I'm sitting under the camera, sometimes I will just close my eyes and listen to people because I can hear whether or not it's correct. And I think that part of that is from my love of theater. And in film, obviously, editing often sets the rhythm. And in theater, the language sets the rhythm. And I think it's also, I think, my personal love of, you know, but it's kind of, you know, Preston Sturges or Ernst Lubitsch or, you know, Howard Hawks, talkies. I love those.
Fast talk.
I love fast talk. And that the actors are really setting the way you're experiencing the flow of the movie. And so I think in that I do what I kind of loosely term, which I took from theater, table work, which is sitting around and sort of going slowly through and talking about the kind of the emotion and the detail of every scene. And I'll tell you that there's no better way to vet how good your script is than to put it in the hands of good actors, because they can't fake it. And then particularly with this one, you know, there's a level of, you have to be okay being ridiculous and take it quite seriously. And I think that that's part of the reason I was attracted to all of these actors. I mean, Margot, I knew we were writing for, but we wrote for Ryan Gosling, even though I didn't know Ryan Gosling at all. And because I knew he was so funny, but I knew he's funny because he takes it incredibly seriously. And when we first spoke on the phone, he said, this is a tragedy for this character. And I was like, yes, you're right, it's a tragedy. And he was playing it with that intensity. And I mean, I'll never forget when I was on set, and there's, you know, the scene with him and Margot, and he's standing on that ridiculous Hummer, and he's like, you know, Century City's, you know, they've all got it all figured out in Century City. And she says, no, they don't have it figured out in Century City because we failed them. And he goes, no, you failed me! And the way he did it, I was like, it's fucking on the waterfront, but it's Ken. What is this? Like, it's like a level of just total commitment to something so strange. And I think for me, rehearsal was when I finally, you know, gathered everyone. I sort of, you know, do the table work individually in small groups, and then I gather everyone. It's to get everybody comfortable with not being embarrassed about how much they have to go for it. And I think one thing that I also like that I've been able to do, and definitely in this one, there was so much dancing, and there we have obviously dancers like I was talking about, but also all the actors dance, and they don't necessarily feel the most comfortable dancing.
I want to pick up just in terms the actual sort of performance level as you're talking about the comedy and being serious about it.
Yeah.
When in the table reads themselves, this is before shooting, did you sometimes push them so that they would exaggerate or be hyperbolic on terms of something so you could see where the range would be for their performance?
I like to get, in a way, I actually like to get everybody off of their feet as soon as so I don't like everybody sitting around. I want them in their bodies because I like kind of the head to toe performance, and also because I like seeing their whole bodies do it, and I like being in the space with them while they do it. So I get them all on their feet, and I don't push them to do it more or less. But I think this sounds so odd, but there's a very long sequence at the beginning where they all say, hi, Barbie, hi, Ken, hi, Barbie, hi, Ken, hi, Barbie, hi, Ken, hi, Ken, hi, Barbie, I got a split of ice creams or whatever it is. And I had them do it so many times because I wanted them to embrace the absurdity of it. And something Ryan said after me, he said, I think you were tuning us. Like we were a choir, and it's less that I say go more extreme. It's more that like I get them all. It's like all their instruments are tuned, so that then when I'm in a position of like, this sounds so almost like conducting them, I can say we're all in the same orchestra. So if I go like this, you're not in a different orchestra. Then everybody knows. Okay, now we're going over here, and that's what it felt like, and it really felt like a company in that way, and getting everybody together. But there were definitely, I would drive home in the car and I'd think, oh my God, what have I done to these, you know, brilliant actors? And then, but it was like either this is going to work or it's going to be ridiculous, but the only way out is through.
Got it. Question. Rehearsal on set itself.
Yes.
Let's look at that example using that scene where she first is with Sasha. And
Yes.
What's the rehearsal? That's the day of. What's going on?
We'd rehearsed it with Margot before we were actually on set, and that was one of the very few times we were like in the real world. But the meeting with Sasha. One of the reasons we cast Ariana, Ariana Greenblatt, who's so wonderful in it, is, to be honest, in the audition, she scared the shit out of us. She was like, maybe the opposite. She was tiny and she was looking at us with her intelligent eyes. And she was just, and Margot's, after she auditioned, Margot's like, I hope she thinks we're cool. And I was like, Margot, she definitely doesn't think we're cool at all. I was like, we're just two ladies who are not interesting to her at all. But it was important for me that the character of Sasha be able to level all the criticisms intelligently against this doll, and that she do it in a way where you're like, she's right. And I think part of that is because I grew up with a mother who didn't love Barbie. And yeah. I was like, my mom is already like, oh my God, she's making Barbie movie. And I was like, if I don't give these arguments real weight, I have to give them space. And I think it was about, for Sasha, I was like, I want to experience this, like, land every punch, and don't ever let up. And I was like, I want you to think about it physically, and I want you to wield your words. And I think I have a very satisfaction watching people when they know what they're saying and they know that it's correct. It has an energy behind it that it's like the words become physical. And so that's always how I kind of talked about that scene. And then Margot, who is just, you've worked with her. I mean, she's, last year you all saw her, and she's so marvelous in Babylon, but she really is that person. She really can cry out of one eye. She really can do.
And you knew that.
She's amazing.
Yes, she's amazing. She's incredible. And she, I think one of the things that she did that was so amazing, that she was a producer on the film. So I was with her, we were working for 2 years. And then she kind of became an actor. She told me, I'm about a month before we start shooting, I'm going to put on my actor hat and then I'll immediately panic. And she did. She put on her actor hat, and then she came over to my house in the middle of the night and said, how the hell am I going to do this? And I was like, I thought you knew. haven't we been? But then she did know in a certain way. But it was a very odd thing. I mean, to play a character that has absolutely no internal life or desires, that's literally an object, who then confronts the reality of death and then crumbles. I don't really know. That's like it's a very strange assignment.
If one more beat of this, because at the end of that scene she does crumble.
Yes, she crumbles. Yeah.
What did you, again, the day of rehearsing? Did you actually rehearse that whole piece, or on the day of, when you're now on this location rehearsing this moment?
Yes, we'd rehearse that whole. We'd gone ahead with our actors. I mean, the nice thing about, we had all the builds and everything, but we also, I was able to rehearse before with the actors in that location, and it is a middle school, and actually even when we were scouting it in the middle school, again, I just, I don't know that there's anything more terrifying than like 12, 13, and 14 year olds. Mm-hmm. They are, they're hard ones. Yeah. And I remember being that, and then I was looking around at them and I was like, if I was in a pink cowboy suit, I would just want to die. and so in a way, it was, we rehearsed it, but also, Margot did feel like an incredible goober in front of all of those like 13-year-olds wearing that outfit. And the same thing was true on Venice Beach when we shot on Venice Beach. So there's rehearsal, but then it was also this reality. And then the weird thing about Venice Beach was it was, this kind of reality where everyone's like, looking great to Ryan, and then to Margot, it's sort of like more leering, and it's a different feeling. And it was actually happening in front of us. It was happening. The reality, it was actually, people would recognize Ryan because Venice Beach is Venice Beach, and they'd be like, right on, man, you look awesome. And then they'd just look at Margot and they'd look her up and down. And she was like, it does have an undertone of violence. And I was like, so I know. And so it was actually happening. But yeah, I love rehearsals. And I think it's also like the time when once you're in it, and once the clock's going, it is a timed art form in a way. And I think it's very hard to get that sense of freedom with the clock. And I try to preserve it no matter what. And I try to, if it feels like it's not going well, I do clear the set and just say, okay, let's figure this out. And even if it's wrong, let's like change it somehow. Mm-hmm. But it's, you have that ability in rehearsal in a way that, it goes away. And I like rehearsal. Okay.
Clearly. You've got an actor, Alexander, who's never acted before. What did you do? And we just saw right now an amazing performance by anybody.
And that rehearsal. That was take one, by the way.
Wow.
Was the rehearsal?
But here's the deal. For me, rehearsal really begins at auditions. I think, and especially if there's an actor, in the case of this kid, he had never been in front of a camera before. The casting director and her crew saw 800 submissions for that part. We didn't like any of them. And finally, we pulled the trigger on a plan, which we were going to do get around to doing at some point anyway, which is call up the schools where I actually was going to be shooting and see who was knocking around there. And there he was at Deerfield Academy, a senior at Deerfield, wanted to be an actor. He was a star, you know, ham bone in the drama department, was applying to Carnegie Mellon and NYU to be an actor, never even done a student film, and there he was. But he had no idea how to audition. And so, bless his heart, you know, he made choices and over-rehearsed and came in and did it badly. But the casting director and I saw something inside of him. So it was really like it was the reverse. It wasn't the actor like really advocating to get the part. It was our advocating to pull something we saw in him out of him. And that was one of his audition scenes that over maybe 6 or 8 auditions, and then finally with Paul Giamatti over Zoom, that was his audition scene.
Oh, wow.
And so, but
do you remember?
That's kind of an extreme example, but I just think because I rely heavily on auditions. In this movie, the only one who didn't audition was Paul Giamatti. But I mean, even in Nebraska 10 years ago, I pretty much knew I wanted to have Bruce Dern play the part, but I still asked him to come in and read just so I could get a sense of his words, his head saying those sounds. It just sort of helps me. So it kind of starts there. And then practical audition, it's usually about in the week before production starts, it's usually the back half of the day. For about 4 hours, 3 o'clock, you know, because the first part of the day is there's a production meeting or last minute location scouting, and the actors are getting their costume fittings or checking out their hotel or, you know, apartments or whatever. And then the back half of the day we get together and either as a group or in parts and rehearse, but really just casually, just talking things through. As Greta says, you know, it's so once that clock starts running, you're in trouble. So it's nice to have ironed out basic issues. I also like, if I can, to take the actors to the locations. You know, if it's a couple's house where they've lived for 40 years and they're acting it, you know, the first day of shooting, that's not right. They should have visited that location before at least once to have some familiarity or ownership with it. I also like table reads, not necessarily because the writer and I or I get anything out of retooling the dialogue. It's really so all of the actors can get to know each other, particularly if I'm combining non-actors, you know, people off the street with movie stars so that they've met at least once before the day of shooting so the non-actor doesn't freak out. Oh, yeah, I go way back with George Clooney. Oh, yeah, you know, we... and the other thing at those table reads, I like to invite the DP, key grip, gaffer, and the sound guys so that collective feeling that we're all in this together begin then. You know, that they've all, and they get a, everybody gets, get a, especially the technicians get a sense of who those, and they like to feel included.
When you're doing a scene and you're actually on set, let's look at the scene where he's with his father. Which is a very, you know, challenging scene, both for the actors playing the father as well as for Dominic. On the day of rehearsal, what's your process before you're getting a camera out there to shoot it?
Yeah, every scene's different. Sometimes I like to rehearse the hell out of it. One thing I've really, with experience, come to hate is, what time did you get your first shot off? Who cares? You know, as long as you get it. You know, in the old days, they'd rehearse until lunch, you know, with the dolly and the focus puller and the actors and do 2 or 3 pages, have lunch, come back and do it. You know, so anyway, each scene's a little bit different. And sometimes, typically though, we know what we're doing, or I'll get together and rehearse maybe on a Sunday, you know, before the work week, especially if actors are just flying in, you know, anew and haven't really, they weren't maybe at the table reading or something. But I'll do a technical, it's a pretty standard filmmaking procedure, do a technical walkthrough, and then I kind of don't want to wreck what they've been thinking about all night and rehearsing. I sort of want to see them, what they bring, and then I'll do a take or two, and then say, oh, what are you doing here? Well, that's great, now just faster, or can you, you know, adjust this, or whatever the hell it is. And in a way, each take is a rehearsal for the next take, is it not? And in a way, each day of shooting is a rehearsal for the entire rest of the schedule. You know, as the character, especially your leads, are falling into their characters, and just it's just ingrained in them.
You remember the preparation of the scene where Divine says he's gone? I guess it's at the party, and she finally.
I do indeed.
Up. And how did that process? Was there a rehearsal?
No rehearsal. No rehearsal. I planted a wide shot. We did it technically. I didn't know what the hell she was planning. I didn't, nor did I want to mess with it. And then it's two or three takes. The first one, two, three takes was actually, if I may speak, a little bit too big for my taste. And then I kind of jumped in and said, all right, this is great, everything you're doing, but can you contain it a bit more? And then that's what's in the movie.
Got it. It works incredibly well.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah, for the scene we just saw, we know he'd rehearsed it a number of times. You just said it was his audition scene. How about here? Did you say anything?
I mean, the
scene we just saw on Dominic.
No, I didn't say anything.
Because he knew this as far
he
as
he knew it. I just said, I had by that time in the schedule confidence that he could. I mean, the kid, you know, he'd never been in front of a camera before, a tyro, whatever, but really talented. It's really extraordinary. And then, you know, he had already been able to do 3 or 4 pages of dialogue with Giamatti in oneers. You know, if you have a pianist who can play Liszt, give him Liszt to play. And so if you have actors who can do 3 or 4 pages of dialogue, take advantage and do a fluid master. And that's just such a gift. So I had no doubt that he could do that. And I wanted it as much as possible in a single take.
You certainly got it.
Yeah.
Certainly got it. Yours. Rehearsal for you, particularly, I know that you had different stages of her, Bella's development. So that I know that you must have, before you started shooting, at least talked or figured out both language and body. Talk about that beforehand, and then I'd like to pick a specific scene. By the way, the one I'd like you to talk about is the scene Kill Me or Marry Me or Kill Me, because there's timing in that scene that is pretty remarkable, particularly the end of it. And I'm curious what happened in your rehearsal of that, or whether it was, as you know, Alexander is talking about, you know, just flow. But first, rehearsal before you're shooting, what is that for you,
yeah,
particularly
so,
in this film?
My rehearsals are never trying to do anything like what we're going to do on the day. What I like to do is like get everybody together and do a lot of physical stuff, like exercises and play games, and just to create this, you know, troop in a way that they start feeling comfortable with each other and have fun with each other. And
give us one game. We don't all have to play it, but give us
yeah.
one game. Some of us may remember from last year, but give us one game.
One game. So for example, like, you know, we rehearse in a space where there's like chairs and stuff. So like if it's like 7 actors, I go like, okay, we can have 5 chairs in the space, and the 6 actors are just going to close their eyes and start walking around in the space. And then there's one actor who has the task so the actors that have their eyes closed, at some point of their choosing, they start slowly sitting down. And so the actor, there's one actor left that has the task of putting a chair under their ass as they're sitting down, otherwise they're gonna fall. So, you know, I just have them all walking around in space, and like at different times, like the actor who has the task to put the chairs under them, like has to be really observant. And you know, whoever starts sitting down, he has to grab a chair, go quickly, and sometimes it happens like 3 actors at the same time start sitting down, and he has to rush around. And so that's like the first step of the process. And so they start getting warmed up. And then I go like, okay, let's read the scene now. And we read the scene. And it's like, okay, whatever you remember from the scene, they haven't learned their lines yet. So whatever you remember from the scene, as you're doing that, say your lines. So there's all these people doing all these other stuff that have nothing to do with the scene. They're trying to remember their lines. And there's this other actor who's trying to, like, not have anybody fall on their ass. And it just creates, and it's funny, and, if, you know, and it's, they take turns in doing that, like, then someone else is responsible for that. So there's, like, loads of games. Like, I just improvise, like, you know, have these people there and, you know, think, oh, what could we play now? And, you know.
And like, by the way, where are some of your learning, like, this game? Where are you getting these games from?
I just, like, coming up with them. Like, I had the opportunity to, I've done some theater, and I had, you know, in theater in Greece especially, like, we have a lot of time to rehearse. Like, we would rehearse for 3 months before you do a play. So you don't even have to have an idea of how you're going to stage it. You can actually work with the actors and figure it out. So you go through this process of learning the actors, learning how, you know, what you can use in order to make them reach the point that you'd imagining or envisioning, or, but it's all about like giving them the space to be creative, to feel good with each other, to be ridiculous in front of each other and not care. And the other important thing is, like, as I mentioned before, like when you start importing the text in a way that is not too intellectualized and too analyzed, you know, they kind of acquire that knowledge of the language and the text in an unconscious way. So, you know, on the day, I mean, I have no idea what they're going to do. So,
question
I discover.
About just Bella's development in terms
Bella's
of,
development, yeah, sorry. But that was one particular thing that we actually rehearsed for real because it was quite complicated. And, you know, there's some things we couldn't shoot in order. So she basically had to like jump, especially in the beginning we shot, you know, because we shot London first and it's the beginning of the film and the ending of the film. So she had to do that, those two things back to back and none of the middle. So she basically had to go from the least developed to fully developed. And so we had some separate rehearsals with Emma, the two of us, which were, we kind of figured out, we separated the script in stages, like stages of her development. So it was like 5 stages. I think in the beginning we went for 10, but we decided that's too ambitious. Like we could never find like such minute details in order to assign them to 10 different stages. And that would happen, you know, naturally when we're filming. So we separated the script in 5 stages and then we would go like, okay, stage one, how do you move? How do you walk? How do you speak? How do you sound? And just actually rehearse that.
In stage one, how, just similar to what I was asking Greta, where were your extremes? Because, you know, this is probably the most challenging stage where she is a child.
Yeah.
What was the extremes?
Well, not an actual child, but yes.
Well, what were some of the extremes that, or did you go to the extremes? Did you push it, let's go this far, and then let's pull it in back? Or what was that process in discovering that, for example, that stage?
It was more like, you know, trying things out and like instinctively feeling that, okay, this is feels good, so we can go to the next stage now.
Now, would that be in agreement when you say this feels good? Because we've all been in the situation where the actor says this feels good, but we don't.
No, I mean, we're pretty much in sync with Emma, and which helps with many things. So yeah, it was a very straightforward process.
Let's look at that day of this particular shoot with where Mark Ruffalo is confronting her, and literally she comes, this is on the boat, and she has that line, you own me, marry me or kill me. And then there's this wonderful silence between these two people. They're just looking at each other, and I'm waiting for you to say, cut. And what happened? Do you remember?
Yeah, I really remember that day. Like, Mark was was very sick, and he was, he's really doing everything in his power to be there. And it actually kind of helped in many ways. And we're trying to do this in one shot. And we did like something like 30 takes of it. And every time he'd do something different. But that's just Mark in general. But also, you know, the added intensity of him trying to fight the sickness, and, you know, and he had like tears in his eyes the whole time, and he was using that in a certain way. And at one point he just took this huge pause, and nobody knew what he was going to do next, if he was going to, you know, continue this scene, if he was having a heart attack, if he's gonna, like, we don't know, and she didn't know, and it's kind of apparent, and then he goes like, I gotta go to the casino, and he leaves. So it was just, you know, one of, and then we just did another couple of shots in order for me to be able to, like, figure out, like, all of that stuff that he did, like, if I could somehow put it together. And it's only a couple of cuts, I think, towards the end of the scene.
When for example, like this, will you come onto your set, and will you work with your actors before you're setting up a shot, or are you right into it? What's the process for you?
No, it's more just technically run it through, so to see where they're going, so I can think about, you know, the camera and the angles and what we need to do. And not even that, because I like to do is, like, which is, you know, a nightmare for an AD, but I never say how many shots it's going to be. So it's like, we go like, so they're coming from there and they're sitting there, and I go like, oh, this would be nice to do this move and this zoom. Are you going to do another shot in this scene? I don't know. Let's see how it plays out, and we'll figure it out. So then we do 30 takes of that, this particular scene. I don't generally do many takes, I think. But so we do 30 takes and go like, are we done? I go like, no, I think we need to do like a couple of more shots of them. You know, like, because I don't know, like, I like that last one, but the beginning was good from the first.
Because you come from theater, when you want to give a redirection, what kind of language are you using?
Grunts.
Can you give us an example?
Yeah. No, but especially with Emma now, and we've made so many things, it is true that we don't really have to say much. Like, you know, I'm near the camera, she finishes a take, she kind of leans this way, she looks at me and goes like, okay, do it again. And, you know, and she does. And, well, and sometimes it's like little things, like, you know, like Alexander says, like, something needs to be faster, something needs to be, you know, slightly, you just try and, you know, like, fine tune them. But they, you know, they're great actors. They know what they're doing. And I don't have the language to tell them specifically. I can just create a better environment. I can give them more time. I can give them more chances to do it. But I, you know, to have the language to actually tell them, I find it like very tricky, and it might lead to a very wrong direction. And that's the reason that I don't even like to discuss with them beforehand in general about the characters, about their motives, about their state of mind. I just don't want to know what they're thinking. I just want to be there as much as I can, with as much distance that I can, and observe what they're doing, and try and be, you know, clean to understand what's happening, instead of us having agreed on, oh, this is why I'm doing this, and this is why I'm doing it this way, and I'm going like, yeah, it's amazing. That's what's.
Do you feel that also has been picking up what Alexander just said? Do you feel that also is now coming from having cast and knowing that these actors are already going to deliver because of the incredible talent you've got?
Yeah, of course, that's part of it. But like, even with people that I don't know, or sometimes I work with non-professional actors, you just don't want to be in the same lie. Like, yeah, we know what we're doing, and this is what comes out, and it actually doesn't. Other people don't see it that way. So I want to have the distance to be able to observe that and say, what are you doing? Like, this doesn't make any sense. And, you know, and the actor might have something in their head like, yeah, but when she did that, yeah, but like, I never thought of all that, and this just doesn't make any sense. So let's try something different, you know.
That's what I wanted to know, yeah. The next line. Let's try something different.
No, don't do that, you know. Right. I go, okay.
Chris, rehearsal beforehand and obviously on the day of. What was the process here, and particularly working with Killam, who you've obviously known for years in terms of, you know, actually developing him as an actor, and here he's a very different role. What was, if there was a rehearsal time beforehand, how did you use it, and what was the process?
Yeah, I mean, I've worked with Killam for 20 years, which helps. You know, we've got a good understanding, mutual understanding. He did a lot of preparation on his own. And he would call me and talk to me about what he was doing and ask questions and things. As far as rehearsal specifically, what I like to do is just in my office, I'll get one or two of the actors. I'll do the different combinations of the principals, and we'll just read a couple scenes. And I don't ask them to perform it. I just ask them to read it so I can hear the words in the room. And if there's an extra character, I'll read the lines, which is horrible and embarrassing. But humbling for me, which they enjoy. And what I try to, we'll find things. I mean, with Killam, in one scene, there's a line he has where it was originally scripted, isn't anyone going to tell the truth about what's happening here? And he was very hung up on that and didn't want to say it. And he's not the kind of actor to ever insist or whatever, but he found it expositional and, you know, and in talking it through and then not really rehearsing the scene full bore, but just going back and forth with it. I realized that it just needed to change it to, is anyone going to tell the truth about what happened here? And then he was fine with it. And it's just those kind of like little shifts. I'm rehearsing not to see what they're doing, to hear my script rattling around, and also to give them the vocabulary as we shoot for how to tell me to change things or when they need me to change things. So I'm sort of, in a way, not rehearsing the film, I'm rehearsing the process of working together. We do that, you know, with the principals for during prep as I have time. And then what I do in shooting is 7 o'clock, cast on set, ready to shoot, and we rehearse, and just me and the cast. And then after one or two rehearsals, I'll let the DP come in, and Hoyte will just stand to one side and just watch it. And then at some point in that process, I'll see Nilo Otero, my first AD, will have like hidden himself in a closet somewhere, and he'll be watching. And so gradually we just bring everybody in and start to light around them as we rehearse. And then I always try to shoot something very early, not for the traditional production report where the studio cares, but because if you don't, people stop believing that you will, and everything gets slow, or hair and makeup. Nobody believes that you're serious about needing everybody ready at 7. So try to shoot something early, even if it's a master that I might not use, but just to start rehearsal through running film through the camera. Because to me, until the film runs through the camera, nobody's really focused. So there can be beneficial discussions in rehearsal, but nothing's really, everything's loose, and you need it to tighten up into that moment, and shooting does that. So that's sort of the way I try to orient it.
If you want to redirect, what kind of language might, and obviously this differs from actor to actor, but what kind of language will you use if you feel, oh, I want something else here? What will be in the process?
You skipped over the answer there, because I'm not sure it is obvious that it's different for every actor. It's completely different for every actor. So I honestly can't even answer that question, because there are actors who want very careful, just expressions or a word or two. There are actors that need you to abuse them horribly and you know, in some kind of humorous or quasi-humorous manner, and they like that and it releases tension. And there are other actors who demand, not literally demand, but you know that what they need is focus and calm and concentration. So there's a lot of different ways, and sometimes it's about not talking to the actors, but talking to the crew. You know, and I have an understanding with my crew. Sometimes I'll be hard on them because the actors need to see me do. They need to see me make sure that they're going to pay attention to the performances, that I'm caring about creating the right space for them, things like that. But you feel that out with the actor, and every actor is different. The miraculous thing to me about actors is I've never met one who's the same as another. But when you put them in a two-shot, when you put them in a master together, they find a common language. It's sort of beautiful, and that's the magic of the process. That I'm not an actor, I don't understand it, and that's why I'm interested in it. And I learned years ago that even if you're not going to use the sort of profile two-shot, or there isn't an easy shot, you have to film it, because otherwise the close-ups won't match. You know, they'll be acting in two different movies, and you need that wider coverage just to bring everybody into the same energy.
In terms of performance, there are a number of scenes that come to mind that I feel probably were very challenging. Mm. One of them, and I'm interested in sort of the process, when he learns that Gene's died. This is outside, and Kitty has come to actually, you know, wake up and, you know, straighten up. Do you remember that process of what, that scene, and how you were directing them, or what happened?
Yeah, it was it was outside, very cold, and we had to shoot it in Magic Hour, so it had to be done reasonably fast. We found a gully, so the sun was off it early, so we could stretch that period a little bit. But it had to be done efficiently, and it was at the end of a very long day. Killian had already done the whole scene where he comes out of the rain to the back of a meeting of scientists who are sort of rebelling against the Manhattan Project. He'd done all of that, several other scenes, because he shot very fast. And so it was the end of a very long day, which I think actually helped his energy in a way. He was exhausted and very ready to shoot that scene, I think. He and Emily Blunt have done another film together. They did A Quiet Place 2 together. So they had they're great friends, a lot of communication, and that really helped. The scene starts with horses, you know, and so everything was difficult about it. But I think all of that kind of helped their performances. And I don't think I directed it very well at all, actually. I fumbled a lot on that day, but they made it work really well. I knew what I wanted, but I was in that mindset because we were having to shoot very fast. So Emily, when she first goes down close to him, she moved so close to him that I knew I wouldn't be able to get a close-up. So I immediately in rehearsal was like, well, maybe your character would sit a bit further back or whatever. And she more or less told me to fuck off. I mean, politely. But she's like, don't box me and let me do my thing. And I was like, all right, fine, okay. we got a beautiful profile two shot, some of which is in the film. And then when it came to the close up, we just figured it out. And you do, you know, I don't, you know, Hoyt is just like, yeah, we'll shove him over and cheat the whole thing or whatever and make it work. And that generally is my mindset, is to try and make it work and never interfere with what the actors are doing. But when you get that ticking clock, and when you're really trying to get through things, you do interfere a bit too much. You try to control it too much. But it didn't hurt the scene. And their ability to work together really made it what it is. And it was a fun scene to shoot, actually. It was intense, but it was fun.
In discussing the very last, which we saw here, the very last scene for him, in which all of this is now coming to a head, what has he created? And in your story, he's constantly challenged, what do you really believe? And we know that that's part of our challenge as people who are in the midst of nuclear ages. Do you remember saying anything specific for that last moment to him? Or do you remember that, you know, filming that itself?
I mean, with Killian, he doesn't like to overly analyze things verbally. And with this character who's so layered, there are various things that are put in the script to do with his intentionality or what his... To me, he was always a strategic thinker. So there are layers of strategy. So even when he's talking to Einstein at the end, you know, my take on it was he's kind of fucking with Einstein a little bit, actually, as well as everything else that's going on. And I think some of those things Killian responded to and used, and some of them he just rejected as being my sort of mechanistic version of what's going on, as sort of overly clever, overly overthinking things. And I've never really sat him down to ask him which. You know, I see it in the performance, so I see what I think he's doing because he's... But I think sometimes just having the conversation, putting the thought in the actor's head, even if they reject it, they carry the ghost of it. There's a little layer, there's a little overtone there. Yep.
For all of you, what do you do with stress? What's the most stressful part of directing for you? And you know, what's the most stressful part of directing for you? And how do you deal with it, Chris? What's the most stressful part?
Can't we start with Marty? I mean,
I can. I'm willing to.
No, I'll do it. For me,
maybe the stressful part.
most stressful, definitely pre-production. I think pre-production starts off with this joyous, wonderful, we're going around the world, we can shoot anywhere, we can do anything, which is so much fun. And then it gradually just gets hammered into a smaller and worse and more horrible box. And by the end, everybody is desperate to start shooting it and move on. And so years ago, I decided I would never prep for longer than 12 weeks. So we only have a prep 12 weeks. I do a soft prep with just myself and the designer for months beforehand. And then we just do 12 weeks. Because to me, after that 12 weeks, you're just re-prepping it. You're losing locations, finding new ones. So I just can't take that stress for too long. So the way I manage it is to just limit that time period because I find that really the tricky part.
Wow, thank you. I think we're all going to take that lesson home. I like this one. Yorgos, what would you say is the most stressful part for you as a director, and how do you handle it?
For me, it's filming, because it's like I know every day that, you know, we'll probably won't have another chance to do this, and it's like this forever. And that kind of, you know, takes a toll on you day after day.
And how do you handle it?
Well, medication. I want to say...
What we're looking for is authenticity up here, yeah. And so that's fine.
You know, and talking it out with close collaborators, but yeah.
Have you ever...
Bills help, yeah.
On this particular...
Particular medication?
Yeah, no, not that.
No,
that
you
later.
Have to see a doctor
tonight. But when, for example, you're in the position where I didn't get it all today, I want to go back to this set. How do you handle that?
I don't know. Like, most of the times I swallow it, and I rarely do reshoots. I don't know if it's like a thing that has like stayed with me from, you know, starting making films in Greece. It was inconceivable. I mean, we could barely shoot the actual stuff. Like to could go back and reshoot something. Like we shot things like we couldn't pay for anything. Like we need to, you know, borrow clothes from people because we can't, you know, buy clothes. Like there's nothing. So... Just the, and you know, starting to make English language films and having some kind of a budget and all that, and structure, which is helpful on one hand, but then it kind of limits you at the same time. It was inconceivable for me to go like, well, you know, we have to kind of, you know, have another extra day or like this. I don't know. There's this kind of sense of responsibility and failure that you didn't manage. That I, you know, I try to figure it out without having to go back. Sometimes we can just go back, like when you know you're shooting at the same location or near or whatever, you might have another chance. Now I've learned after some films that it's okay if you have to go back. Yeah. So I'll try to do it that,
got it.
For example.
Got it. Thank you. Alexander, what do you do with stress? Or what's the most stressful part of directing for you? And how do you handle it?
Kubrick or Spielberg who said the most stressful part is getting out of the car every morning.
Kubrick.
No. Yeah, Kubrick. Getting out of the car.
What
kind of car do you use?
That terror of being picked up and being driven and looking at your pages and how's it going to be? And then going through that phalanx of trucks and bearded men with walkie-talkies. Wolfing down breakfast and their muscular calves out even when it's when it's below zero and you know that fear that the huge mechanics of it are going to somehow mar the intimacy of what you want to shoot that day. So there's that. I relate to what Chris said about the last couple weeks of prep. I can see that. And then every day, I mean, this is everyday bread. Every day there's something that's trying to freak you out. Like, it's gonna rain this afternoon, or the actor's chipped his tooth, or the actor says, well, wait a second, I had the keys in my right hand in the master, and I had the keys in my left hand. And it's just a constant process of people trying to freak you the fuck out every day. Yeah. So it's the little things. And then kind of as Yorgos was saying, then just the fatigue that sets in the back half of particularly a long schedule and fighting that. So
how do you deal with these stressful moments?
It's like a bad drug trip. It's just the only way out of it is through it.
Yeah.
Just like Greta was saying, only way out of it is you just keep going. Yeah. Plus, we're just so lucky to be doing it. And also with experience, you go, all right, I've been through this before and it'll be okay and whatever. It's just a movie.
Thank you, Alexander. Greta, what of directing is stressful for you, and how do you deal with it?
I agree with everything that's been said. I think it's stressful from sort of beginning to end, the whole time, particularly when people look at you and say, well, why would we give you money to make this? You think, oh, well, you don't have to. Hey. I think the times I'm most, I get most worried is actually when an actor is having trouble and that I can't figure out how to help them, or I feel like it's exactly what Chris was saying. Every actor is different, and everybody needs something different to do their work. And it's as incredible production design and have the DP and everything, but the audience feels through the actor, and it's very it's just a panicked moment when you feel you need to help them and you can't figure out how and they can't figure out what they need. And usually I think it is the answer is slowing everything down, clearing people out and trying to figure it out, which can be very hard to do. And then I find weekends are really hard because when you're on set and in the pace of it has its own rhythm, and then when you're taken out of it for 2 days, it's actually hard. I find it hard because that's when I start questioning everything, and I start then every night I fall asleep, I cut it in my head, and then I find I'm like, oh, I didn't get that shot, okay, well then I cut it's like the kind of the insecurity wheels get really moving on the weekends.
And how do you deal with it?
Eat, panic, just stressed out. I hold my dog and I eat. The last couple weeks of prep are terrible. And Noah always reminds me, he said, just remember, you shoot it one day at a time. You don't have to shoot the whole movie on Monday.
That's right.
You shoot the scenes you have to shoot on Monday. And I'm
right.
I only have to shoot one day at a time. I mean, I think this is a post thing, but testing, the first test is just, it's like telling someone you love them and getting a grade. And you're like, I told you I loved you. I got a 71. What the fuck? And then you're like, and then you read these comments that are like, you just cry. And then you have to go back in. But then it's, you know, I think part of what's addicting about making films is the feeling of being kind of on a precipice at all moments. And I think I love this sort of high wireness of it, and I like the kind of collapse that's possible, which is probably psychological issue I have.
Will, you want to go sell some pizza? Yeah. Thank you.
And well, also, and the adrenaline.
The adrenaline.
Because you're all
yeah.
hyped up on adrenaline.
Yeah. Yes, yes. And it's, yeah, it's the greatest thrill. I always say, the greatest thrill of my life has been able to, the fact that I get to direct movies. It's the greatest thrill being with so many different kinds of artists, being able to realize it. It's a communal art form. It happens between people. And I think, I mean, for me, being a mom and being a director, the two best things I've ever gotten to do, and being able to do them at the same time is kind of brings me to tears.
Right on.
As you say in your movie, you can hold logic and feeling at the same time.
Yes, that's
Marty,
right.
I know you never yes. feel stress. I know it's no. not a thing for you.
Nothing bothers me.
I know, but if it did, if you were to say what the most stressful part of directing for them.
Everything that they've said, except that I really do think it's the shooting that gets me. And don't forget, we come from back in 71 and 72, where if something was scheduled for one day, somebody comes on the set and says, you got to do it in half a day.
Yeah.
Oh, what happened? So, I mean, now, I mean, the great thing, though, you know, 81, I mean, the reality is like it's been such an extraordinary gift. I can't complain about it. I enjoy the complaining as part of the process. It's important. I'm not kidding.
Yeah,
because
cool.
Like in the morning when Kubrick said, getting out of the car. Okay, hit me with it. Bang, you close the door. I see who's in front of that trailer. I, you know, the first days we never had trailers. So, you know, we hardly had film. I'm only joking. Anyway, get in the trailer, and then I'm in there, and I said, I'm just alone. And all of a sudden, they knock on the door, and they come in. And they come in. It's my DP and the two ADs and maybe another assistant. And then I become basal faulty. I go into rants. And it's usually about the car, or it's about the cup, or it's about what the television is right here, and they can't get TCM today in this place. I can't believe it. And we're back and forth and back and forth. And then you know, we have one issue, and what is that? And I'm ranting and ranting and ranting and ranting and ranting. Sometimes it goes on for like 15, 20 minutes. And then, and they're all standing there, and then we start to laugh. And the laughter is what it's about. And laughter, it's what it's about. And it all comes out, and then I come out, and really, then we get into now all the anxiety of the day, the weather, working with actors and non-actors, animals in the frame, all this sort of thing. And again, you know, I also, in the past, been very blessed again in the past 10 years to have working on pictures, maybe except in Taiwan and Silence, where the nature of the terrain was such that we were forced to shoot a certain way. You know, there was hardly any CGI. They were just working. But prior to that, I have had situations where not only did I get out of the trailer and there were certain people that were against the film, and then you had to fight your way through them all day and into the evening, special meetings and threats and that sort of thing. And you're just a pugilist. You fight and fight and fight. And I even find that sometimes I got to the point where if they tell me, don't worry, you have another day, I start to worry anyway. What are they gonna do? That can't be, I have another day, you know? So give me the problem, you know? Tell me I don't have the other day so I could fight against it and get the other day, you know? And then after a while they say, no, you don't have to do this. All right, so certain things were happening. But the biggest issue ultimately is the stamina. And as I was saying, legs and staying as clear-headed as possible, and even finding certain, you know, long setups if I can take a nap, if possible. you know, but I do find that the shooting is the hardest. I want to get to that editing room. I edit as much in my head as possible. That's why we're talking about dialogue scenes. Even if it's a shot of two people, I know that that's going to go there. I know that's going to, we can use that from that take. Otherwise, and I could do it. I know I have it. But the editing room is really myself and my friend, my editor, Thelma. We really enjoy just being left alone to make the picture until we screen it for everybody, and then they get mad at us again. You know what I mean? They said, what do you do? You know. So, but that is a pre-production, don't mind too much, but there is that thing in pre-production where they start giving you calendars now, and you look and it says, you're 20 days away from shooting. I said,
I know.
19 days away, 6 days. Yeah. All right, all right. Let's. You know what? Let's start shooting. Stop it. No, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, oh my God, it's all coming. Yes, it's coming down. That's what it is. That's how we do it.
Well, here's the thing. All five of you. You know what I mean?
Terrifying.
All five of you do this incredibly well, and we want to thank you for being who you are, for being such great filmmakers, for making such wonderful films. Thank you.
Thank you.
You're just fabulous.
Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed listening to part two of this exclusive discussion. You can watch the full video of the Theatrical Feature Film Symposium on our website at dga.org/events. Past episodes of The Director's Cut are available wherever you listen to podcasts. And don't forget to share, subscribe, rate, and review. We'd love to hear your feedback, and you can help fellow film buffs find the show. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you next time. This podcast is produced by the Directors Guild of America.